an idea that exists in the hearts of everyone, to put the resources into the hands of the people, to increase the quality and benefits of their life. Let's remove the middleman. Wednesday from 8 to 9 p.m. Dark City Compassion Club awaits you. It's your radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Dark City Compassion Club. And tonight we have Neil Woods, who spent 14 years as an undercover officer, who has very kindly offered to come and talk to us tonight. There's lots of us here on the panel. And without further ado, thanks for coming on the show. Neil, can you introduce yourself, please?
Yes, hello. I'm Neil Woods. I'm the chairman of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, the UK branch.
Wonderful. Thanks ever so much for coming on. It's very kind. I know that, you know, your history and background, there's a lot of, you know, disagreement between a few people on, you know, the history of cannabis and the police, and it's a big area. So thanks a lot for coming on. It's very brave of you. Could you just tell us a little bit about LEAP and why you got involved?
Well, LEAP started in America in about 2002 when some ex-police officers, soon to be ex-police officers, got very frustrated with the war on drugs and started a campaign to try and end prohibition. It's been very successful. There's 100,000 members worldwide, represented in 120 different countries. And here we are in the UK trying to make it a success here. I think the interesting thing in terms of campaign groups, how we differ from other people, is that because we are ex-police and we have ex-MI5, a couple of chief constables in our group in the UK, we can actually get some people in Middle England and some people to listen to the message that might not have otherwise have paid attention to it. So I think that's where I see our role.
Well, now, I just want to remind the listeners out there that they can call in and ask questions about LEAP and direct them to Neil. So people are welcome to jump in the show. Now, Neil, could you tell us a little bit about why you decided to get into this field of... A little bit about your history, Neil, before LEAP.
Yeah, no problem. I was a police officer for 23 years. 14 years of that, I used to work as undercover within the world of drugs investigation. Now, it wasn't all the time. It was about 6 or 7 months off and then a few months off. But I would be doing sort of long-term infiltration work across the country, which a lot of the time was low level and trying to work my way up to try and get to know some of the more important gangsters. So I generally would start off in a city centre and pose as a heroin user and just see where it would take me. And then 6 or 7 months later, lots of people would be arrested and some people would get sent to prison. Now, through every year that I did this, what I observed is that, of course, the drug flow never stopped. People were going to prison that really had no business going to prison because they were just ill. And for every gangster you arrest, lo and behold, there's another one, and the gangsters year after year get nastier and nastier because that's the response to the police tactics. And so eventually it dawned on me that actually I wasn't any part of the solution, I was part of the problem, and that the reason the gangsters were getting more nasty is because of the police tactics, for which, of course, I was a part. So, unfortunately, it took me quite a while to come to that conclusion. So I'm really hoping I can persuade people to come to that conclusion quicker than I did.
Sounds like a vicious cycle that you're a part of. I'm actually sat with Sarah, and she's very kindly arranged this interview tonight, and I think she's got a few questions for you. Sarah, do you want to ask Neil a question?
Yeah, hello, Neil. I'd like to say...
Hi, Sarah, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. First of all, I'd like to say thank you very much for coming on, you know, because... I like what Martin was saying. I do know it's almost a bit like coming in the lion's den for you in a way. Without meaning to sound a bit horrible, because most people that we know are on the opposite side to what you have been for the last 23 years. And is it 23 years?
Yeah, 23 years I was in the job, but I left in 2011.
Yeah, and so it's quite a big thing for us, and it's a big thing, I don't know if it is anymore, because of all the work that you've been doing with Leap. I think the work that you've been doing with Leap is good, and I do think it's a good part and a necessary part of this movement, I do personally. And I'd like to say thank you for coming on, and thank you for actually putting yourself in this position, and I hope that you do feel comfortable and relaxed and happy to talk with us, and it's good. So what I want to know really is, what was your intention when you first joined the police force? What did you want from the police force?
Well, I mean, when I did decide to join, it's an odd story, because I was going to go backpacking around Europe. I wanted some adventure, but then I saw the advertisement for the police, and so I flipped a coin and it came up heads, and so I went into the police. So it was a whim, really. But once I got into the police, I wanted to do the right thing. I had fairly noble ambitions. I wanted to catch bad guys. Very simple, almost boyish way of looking at it, to be honest.
Yeah, I think a lot of people probably do go in with a bit of a naive sort of, attitude. Me, when I was growing up, I kind of knew a lot about police corruption and never to really trust the police. That's kind of how I was brought up, so... For a lot of people, they're not brought up like that. You know, they're brought up to think that the police are going to look after them. And in a lot of cases, they do. You know, I take people for who they are and who they are when I meet them. And when I met you, Neil, you genuinely do come across as a lovely, as a nice man, a genuine man to me now. And like I keep saying, I do respect the fact that you are willing to actually stand up and say what you do say. So I would like to thank you again for that. But it is a difficult thing, because I don't think a lot of people are aware of what the police force is. Because basically you have to follow orders that are actually really against human rights, haven't you?
Well, yes. I mean, I've come to understand that now. Yeah, the police is a discipline organisation, so it wouldn't really function without it being so, without people doing as they're told. And actually, as a constable, when I went into the police, I completely trusted the structure and the command structure. I completely trusted that if I was told to do something, then that was right. And it took me a long, long time to realise that drug laws infringe on civil liberties. Daft as that might sound to yourself or many of your listeners, I grew up actually believing things like you have one smoke of crack and you're addicted for life, you know, that kind of silly rhetoric that came from President Reagan and that kind of era. You know, I grew up on that kind of crap. But of course, it isn't true. But if you go into it believing that, then, and you believe that the drug dealers are the great evil trying to destroy society, then, you know, you can feel quite justified in whatever orders you get, really. But of course, as you point out, it's a complete infringement of civil rights, because everybody is a shepherd of their own mind and body, and it is a simple piece of freedom to be able to exercise that right. But it should be pointed out, I think, people around the world and politicians will sometimes quote that in this country, we police by consent. And I think apart from the drug laws, we do. It is the drug laws which completely ruin that ideal, because it's policing something which isn't wrong in itself. It's policing something that's prohibitive.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That is one of the things about the police law. There's a few other laws that I find that I don't actually agree with as well, myself, but we're talking about cannabis prohibition today anyway, so I don't really want to go off the subject. Do you had a few more questions, didn't you, Martin?
Yeah, Neil, do you think we should decriminalise in the UK?
Decriminalising is the natural first step towards regulation. Decriminalising is important because nobody should have a criminal record for using a drug, and certainly no one should go to prison for using a drug, which, of course, is going to do them no good whatsoever. So the criminalisation of drug use and supply is a very great evil indeed, so that is the first step. But it's only a small step for me. It should be a complete regulation of the drug supply to take the control away from organised crime.
I think Bob wants to step in and say something. Bob, have you got a word?
Yeah, please, Sue. Please, I do, yes. Hi, Neil. Welcome to Dark City. A couple of things, Neil, if you could. Cannabis is not a drug. It's not a drug. And if we can try and stop grouping cannabis with crack cocaine and heroin and drugs, that would be really helpful. On all sides, especially for the public. And of course, I'm fully aware of it's a herb, as many other things are. There has been green tar opium distributed here in Spain before now to heroin addicts, to take them off the streets. Many people have been placed into this organised crime. I'm a member of an organised crime group, Neil, that supply people with cannabis oil, as is Jeff. Jeff Ditchfield is with us this evening, listening in. This laws that have been broken, it's the Misuse of Drugs Act, that of course is of course an act. No one's been hurt. We're just pretending that someone's going to get hurt. No one has been hurt. There's no plaintiff. There's no victim. Sometimes there may be a complaint, placed in against someone's a breach of someone's peace, maybe. There is no victim. It's a victimless crime. So it's an act, the Misuse of Drugs Act, as I was saying, that actually states that drugs shouldn't have any undue side effects. Like killing you or making you throw yourself off a tower block, suicide, death, things like that. They shouldn't have undue side effects. And that they should increase the quality and life of the prescribee, quality and benefits of life of the prescribee. So my question to you, Neil, is why aren't police constables arresting doctors all over Britain? Why has the law been twisted onto good, honest people who are really standing against the largest criminal fraternity the world's ever known, the UK government? Why aren't doctors being arrested by the police constables who are there to uphold the law? At least I thought they were, rather than act upon childish acts. I don't know if you can answer it for me, Neil, but I'm perplexed why the law can be used against people in one group of society, but yet doctors are allowed to misprescribe drugs on a daily basis under the Misuse of Drugs Act, which actually caused death.
Well, that's an interesting question. I mean, the structure of our legal system protects doctors and it doesn't protect other people, but it you're making an interesting point, because it is a fact that those that are economically disadvantaged are more likely to be to have problems with the Misuse of Drugs Act, as are ethnic minorities. So in the exercising and enforcement of the Misuse of Drugs Act, there is a great deal of prejudice being exercised and expanded upon. This is one of the great problems with laws with drugs. If you ask your police, your nation's police, to go and investigate a crime which is basically comes from a morality or a sense of morality, then those constables have to decide what the immoral look like, what those people look like. And that's how you expose prejudice and how you amplify prejudice. So this is one of the effects of the Misuse of Drugs Act. It's causing divisions in society.
I totally agree with you. And I don't think anyone else would disagree with that. It is causing divisions in society, and a lot of what's being manipulated is to do just that. But why aren't the doctors being, you know, they're not being protected by it. I don't see how they are being protected. I don't see why any policeman can't walk into a doctor and arrest him for prescribing drugs that do not increase the quality and benefits of life. I don't get why they can't do it. And I mean, maybe I'm ignorant of some strange fraternity or something, you know, that stops it happening. But I thought the law in England, especially, well, all over the world, was the same for everyone. Are you telling me that the legal system in the UK, I know you can't speak for the rest of the world, but are you telling me that it's not equal for everyone, Neil?
Well, doctors are immune from prosecution for the supply of drugs listed under the Misuse of Drugs Act if they are prescribed according to the medical experience of the doctor. So in order for police to prosecute, they would have to have knowledge specifically greater than that in terms of medical experience. Police are also exempt from carrying drugs. It's not the same kind of exemption, but that's the way the Misuse of Drugs Act was designed, I'm afraid.
Yeah, I mean, of course, we know through thousands and thousands of man hours and research and study that, of course, cannabis doesn't have any undue side effects. And of course, it is preposterous that it would actually the Misuse of Drugs Act that is used to make it so-called illegal. Of course, it's not unlawful, is it? And there is no victim, there is no crime within law. So anyway, brilliant, Neil. I mean, and thanks for being honest anyway with me, I feel.
Interesting bit of trivia for you. You know, you said there's no victim. Well, that's very true. There is no victim for a drug crime. So when a police officer has to create a record of a crime, on the recording rules for recording a crime, say they record a burglary, then they put the victim who owns the house where the burglary happened. So you have to put who the victim is on any crime report. So for any drug offence, in the place where it says victim, it says they have to put the Crown. So apparently, if you're in possession of cannabis, the crime, supposed crime, then the victim is the Crown.
Oh, of course it would be. I would agree that, you know, the only people who are really going to lose any money out of this, people medicating themselves, would be the likes of the Crown and those people that associate with them. Yeah. You know, they would be in the sense that they could suffer a loss because they make a fortune out of it being illegal, as you know. I have one other question. I don't see any numbers going up, so I'm gonna milk you for a bit, Neil, if that's all right. You know, it's a war on drugs, and obviously we are winning. As a gangster, X, of course, I'm not in the UK. You see, Neil, so here I'm quite highly respected, and I think, well, I definitely know the same goes for Jeff. Once we've won the war, will we be able to prosecute the people for war crimes?
Well, interesting thought. I think in many countries, the priority will not be prosecuting those people that you perceive to have done wrong, but will be the priority, I think, will be getting those people out of prison who were sentenced during the time of the war. I can see that being the first huge issue once we do actually win. Because, I mean, I can still find it incredible that there are people in prison for life in America just for possession of cannabis. It just blows my mind, really. But as for prosecution, I really don't know. I think that would be a difficult one.
Yeah, I was doing it a little bit tongue-in-cheek as well.
Sorry to interrupt, guys, but Martin Foran asked to speak before Jeffrey Ditchfield. Sorry, guys. They just want to say something. So, Martin Foran, can you just jump in before Jeff?
Yes, Neil. It's welcome to come on. It's very brave of you to come on, and I respect you for it. And what my question is, you said you walked on the hard drugs, cocaine and heroin and things like that. For you to walk undercover in that, surely you had to become a user to be trusted. Can you answer that, please?
Well, I didn't know. I always managed to bluff and keep the bluff going, so no, I didn't have to.
I find that hard to believe. If you're going, you said you were working on it for so long, that in order to be trusted, you would have to become, you would have to at some time or other take some drugs to convince people. I find it really hard to accept that you haven't.
I know people do say that to me, but if ever we meet, I'll have to explain in some detail how I would avoid those situations. I mean, I've been assaulted and stripped naked and all sorts of different things to test my trust. But you see, most of the dealings went on in the streets. And the reason most dealings go on in the streets is because that's where organised crime groups for heroin and crack feel safest to do it. And so the last thing they want is actually people using drugs in the streets. So although they would assault me, thinking that my backup would might come running, or they would strip me naked looking for technical equipment, listening devices, that kind of thing, they never actually got me to eat any heroin in front of them or anything.
Thanks, Neil. All right, that was my question.
Back to Jeff.
Yeah, thanks for your question, Martin. Jeffrey Ditchfield has come in the call. Jeffrey, can you please post a question towards Neil?
Hi, Neil. How are you?
I'm all right, Jeff. How are you doing?
Not too bad, thank you. We've bumped into each other at a few venues, I recall, but I don't think we've actually spoke.
No, just with a very quick hello, I think, is as best we've done, really.
Yeah, I think so. But nice to talk to you anyway, but a few questions, which I'm sure you won't mind. I noticed you said that you joined the police force because you wanted to do the right thing. And then for 14 years you were there doing what you thought was the right thing. When did it start dawning on you that what you considered to be the right thing when you joined wasn't necessarily the right thing, i.e. entrapping people?
Well, it was a sort of process... an incremental process, really. Because after the first few years of working undercover, I realised that the war on drugs was a ridiculous concept and that policy wasn't right. But the trouble is, I was quite good at what I did. And when some of the senior covert police would say to me, well, we need you to do this job because these gangsters, they are raping people for punishment. They are kidnapping people. We can't get close to them. Then, you see, it came about catching people who were raping people and kidnapping people. And then, so it sort of became a means to an end to catch those people. But, of course, those people had only got so nasty so that they needed to create the fear and do those things to protect themselves. As a result of police tactics like the use of informants or police tactics like the use of undercover police. Go on.
No, I was just going to say, Neil, it just sounds to me in what you're saying is that I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but are you trying to say that the police indoctrinated you into a particular way of thinking, and that was part of your training for this role as an undercover police officer?
I wouldn't say that they indoctrinated me. I started my journey in the way that I viewed things from a different place than I am now. So I've gone through a process of coming to an understanding, but don't get me wrong, I've done some things when I was working undercover, I thought I was doing the right thing. You mentioned the word entrapment. Well, that's a complicated word within the realm of undercover policing. Most people would view from the outside, if they were to view all of undercover work with a negative view, they might consider everything that undercover person did as entrapment. But actually, working within the field, entrapment is quite a complicated word, and you are trained by virtue of all the stated cases that go before and study of the law and previous cases, that you must never entrap anybody, that you must never act as an agent provocateur. You know, these things are taught. That's not to say that at times I haven't trod that line of agent provocateur, whereas some people might consider that I did.
But during your undercover, you must have broken the Misuse of Drugs Act. There's no way on earth you couldn't and be an effective officer.
You mean actually used some drugs whilst I was working?
Well, I meant actually breached the Misuse of Drugs Act, i.e. either possessed, supplied, or any other offences under the Misuse of Drugs Act.
As a police officer, you're exempt from possession offences.
Yeah, so but you're not, though, because there is no exemption in the Misuse of Drugs Act which says that a police officer is exempt. There is, of course, Section 5.4 of the Misuse of Drugs Act, which I assume you're au fait with, even as the next police officer.
Yeah.
And Section 5.4 of the Misuse of Drugs Act is a general defence to possession of drugs. And for the listeners who are here, I suggest you Google Section 5.4 of the Misuse of Drugs Act. It is actually a defence to being in possession of drugs. And Section 5.4 actually covers, for example, I've used it myself, being stopped by police officers in possession of cannabis. I explained I took it off someone to stop them committing an offence under Section 5.4, and that was an acceptable defence. No, I wasn't actually, because they knew who it was and they knew it would be a load of shit, so they just took it off me and walked off. They didn't even give me a caution or ask me to admit anything. But there is no exemption for police officers, is there?
No, but I mean, that's what defence means, really.
So you're using Section 5.4 of the Misuse of Drugs Act as your defence against illegal activity, but that is also open to members of the public as well, isn't it, of course?
Yeah, in the right circumstances, of course it is, yeah.
Yes, of course.
But the exemption is for a constable.
So are you specifically exempted as a constable then from being in possession over and above what's in the Misuse of Drugs Act?
Yes, because if you're in accordance with your duties. So in other words, as long as you are lawfully in possession of it. So
yes,
because I was part of a live investigation, then I would be lawfully in possession of it.
Mm. Okay, I could even
use drugs three times whilst I worked undercover because I was in danger and I was in danger of perception, used it. But the defence even counts there because, there is no law against using and consuming a drug anyway, only the possession of it, as you probably know.
Yeah. Next question, Neil, is, and I like this one, how do I and everyone else in the cannabis community know that you're still not working undercover?
I think the best thing, I'll just have to leave that to your judgment, I think. And
I prefer an answer.
just saying, no, I'm not a cop anymore, I'm not working undercover, that's not really an answer enough to a question like that, is it?
Not really.
But
the thing is, if UK police did want to infiltrate the cannabis movement, one, if it's worth infiltrating, that's a separate issue, but they might believe it is. And a good way would be, you know, an ex-cop who's seen the error of his ways, who comes into the fold and everyone welcomes him with open arms and tells him all their secrets and everything. I mean, how do we know that's not going on at the moment with yourself?
Well, that would be a major conspiracy, wouldn't it?
It would just be an undercover police operation, because apparently conspiracy and other legal sanctions only apply to members of the public. So I'm sure you'd be exempt from the conspiracy. It'd be us lot, unfortunately, who'd be involved in the conspiracy.
Well, I think if you, all I can do is assure you that I'm not an undercover police officer anymore. And and if you, I don't know, I can't really think how else I would persuade you, other than it's going to have to be down to the individual judgment whether the benefits that I bring to the movement outweigh the weight of any suspicion that you might feel.
Well, that's a fair answer, Neil, to be fair, and I appreciate it. What would certainly go personally towards me in putting my mind at rest, and leading on from what you've just said, if me and you could have a few hours chat one day, and if we could go into great, great detail about police training and police undercover techniques and tactics that I could then share with some UK activists, that would be a massive benefit to our movement. How would you feel about that?
I would more than happy to expose police undercover tactics, and I'll tell you why.
Please.
Because, as I've said previously, undercover work does actually increase the harms, because as a tactic, it increases the way that organised crime groups, and by organised crime groups, I mean the kind of gangsters that I've had dealings with, those kind of people that use fear to intimidate.
Yeah.
Undercover work does have an impact on their tactics, and so over time it is causing more harm than it is good. It does no good whatsoever, because it puts people in prison, and it doesn't do any benefit to help the drug supply. It doesn't even do what it says on the tin. It doesn't even do what it sets out to do. So, yes, I have talked about tactics to people. The benefit of that, I'm quite dubious, really, because there's nothing that complicated about it. But yes, to answer your question, I am more than happy to shine a light on police undercover tactics. And I have, in some pieces I've written already, to be honest. In fact, send me your Twitter address afterwards and I'll tweet you something that might amuse you along those lines.
Fair enough. That's my questions for now, gentlemen, if you'd and ladies.
Thanks a lot, Jack.
Sorry, one final thing. I just like Sarah.
Yep.
Do you know, you said that you met Neil and he came across as a very genuine man, etc., etc.?
Yeah.
Well, he was trained to do that by the police force. That's how he's trained to do his job. Now, he may very well be a genuine man in himself personally, but bear that in mind, please.
Yeah.
Thanks, Neil.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff.
Thanks very much, Jeff. Now, I think Bob's wanting to come and say something. Bob?
Yeah, Neil, well done, mate. You've just been grilled, haven't you, a little bit. I'll actually accept you without judging your previous, who you've been. I don't really care who you've been, man, you know. I've met a lot of people, especially over the last probably 6 months, really. I've been here quite a while now. It was quite difficult getting things going. And there's a lot you could do, a hell of a lot you could do in the real physical world. I know Twittering and all that is great fun, but I'm kind of, you'll have to excuse me, a bit of a realist. I like things to develop into tangible stuff, you know. People getting medicine, for instance, actually getting the job done. So I can think of loads of things you could do to assist in what we actually do. I mean, of course, I ain't going to tell you any depths of it, but I can think of, you could help loads of people, man, quite easily. I mean, you'd make a great courier, wouldn't you? and that would prove a lot of things to a lot of people. It's all right, you know, don't worry about it. They ain't going to want to arrest you. Well, make sure you're going to be delivering it to a dying child, you know? So, you know, we'll make sure that if it did come to a court case, then you just become an economically unviable prosecution. You see, these are the lengths that we have to go to, because that's what we're talking about. We're talking about children losing their parents. We're talking about people going to court, winning the cases, and then the social services trying to take the children away, and the local authorities ejecting them out of their properties. You see, it really is a war.
Yeah, it's just, yeah, it is.
And there really is a victim. And I know who the victim is. You see, for those so-called constables, who are obviously not constables, because a constable is there to serve the people, not the crown, the people, lawfully, not following some act for some corporate regime. And because they're not men enough to stand up for what is lawful and morally right, not just legally, but morally right. That takes a higher precedence over crown, because they're not men enough to stand up. They have no honour. They don't even know the meaning of the word. Then those people will still suffer. Slow and long, or some just quickly. I've had gangsters smashed away into my house in the middle of the night. I rang the police. I got as much of a rough treatment from them as I did from the guy. No, it's not quite true. The police didn't want to cut my fingers off. They did let me get dressed. They were slightly better than the gangsters. But, hey, we are to sit and remain calm and do nothing while our brothers and sisters are butchered, killed. Is it 25% of the murders in the UK now? Police? So I'll accept you as a man in honour. I don't care who you are. If I accept you for, excuse me, what you've been, if I had to look at people for what they've been, I'd become enraged and I wouldn't be able to do any good for anyone, especially not myself. You know, I don't like me when I'm angry. I think there's a hell of a lot you can do, really. The first thing would be to recognise what it is you're still lining up with and leave that association. Become a member of Delta 9 or Bud Buddies. I'd accept you into Delta 9. I couldn't. I'd have to ask them, and I'm sure they would, you know. But I'd, what's the word? Propose you. I'd propose you. I don't know if Jeff would for Bud Buddies. But there you could actually take on a real active role with then actually bringing medicine to people who desperately need it. Even if it is for them to just die in dignity. What did you say, Neil?
Well, that is honourable and noble stuff that you do. But the thing is, with my particular past and experience, the fight I want to be making and the fight that I think I'm able to do is to change people's minds that wouldn't otherwise listen to the message. Because we're not going to get anywhere unless we actually get a foothold in the population that's going to be willing to persuade politicians to change the laws.
Just hang on a minute. You must have missed somewhere here, Rob. So I don't exist. Jeff doesn't exist. And we're not actually, this isn't actually happening. So, you know, you say, and I get what you're saying, we're not going to get anywhere. But you're losing.
I want to get to a world, a country where people aren't prosecuted for what you do. People aren't prosecuted for these things at all.
Well, that's really simple. They allow people to do what they choose to do in private. In private? And with, as long as they're not hurting people, there's no wrong with that. Are you aware that the cultivation of cannabis in Spain for personal use is now being decriminalised? On the first of July. Was it July or June? Was it? Do you think that the legislation that you thought would follow would be a positive step for Spain after decriminalising it to now start legislating it in some manner?
Well, you would hope so, wouldn't you?
I wouldn't, no.
You wouldn't?
No. Why would it need to be legislated? Where's the evidence it's ever done anybody any harm? Why would you need to legislate cannabis? Legislate rhubarb, it's a potential killer. I mean, if we're going to legislate, at least let's legislate things that are dangerous. Would you agree?
Well, whatever the harms, perceived or otherwise, or lack of them, at the moment the system isn't working. So I think we're talking about the same kind of thing.
No, well, I spent a lot of time, trying to find, when we first came across Rick Simpson on Dark City, I spent a lot of time, trying to find some genuine evidence against cannabis, you know, it causing damage, okay, genuine, circumstantial, you know, good, solid, and there was a few things, Neil, to be honest, and you know, it's silly. In comparison, you know, because we have to make comparisons in a world, don't we? I mean, you know, potentially sitting in my chair talking to you as a factor of danger, the chair could collapse, I could get electrical, you know, a plane could fall from the sky. But we have to have a comparison. And I think, was it the Queen's Commission used horse riding? You know, is it more dangerous than horse riding? If it is more dangerous than horse riding, then we'll have some legislation. You know,
I, when I saw the statistics for horse riding, when my kids were about, I think they were about 8 and 11 at the time,
mm-hmm.
I got really worried. I thought,
did you?
My God,
what if
my kids want to take up horse riding?
Ping pong.
Horrendously dangerous.
What about table tennis then, Neil?
Thankfully, I couldn't afford horse riding, and that is the problem, isn't it? Really, that's the part.
How about table tennis then? Would that be a good means for where we should and shouldn't legislate? What would you pick? What would be the dividing line between what's dangerous?
People wear riding helmets for horse riding, don't they? They take the choice, yeah. They know the risk, and they wear helmets.
Yeah, but they don't for ping pong, do they? You know, table tennis.
No, this is true. Ping pong balls aren't quite so scary.
If it was less dangerous than table tennis, would it need to be legislated, in your opinion?
Well, no.
Thank you, Neil.
Hi, guys. Sorry to interrupt you. Look, we've got some people in the chat box wanting to ask some questions towards you, Neil. And Sarah wants to go first as well. Go on, Sarah.
All right, Neil. I thought I'd go to just sort of take the pressure off of you a little bit here, Neil. Yeah? You all right?
Yeah.
You know when you was doing your undercover stuff, yeah? I remember you telling me before about stories about the sort of people that ended up being the victim, you know, and they were normally sort of people that had been abused and everything themselves, weren't they?
Yeah.
Is that when you become to realise that, is that one of the things that stopped you from being an undercover policeman? Because I remember you telling a story, because Neil now goes around travelling around the country telling stories about his undercover operatives and all the things that sort of changed his mind, because you're doing a lot of work, and we've hardly mentioned your work that you're presently doing, and he's presently working for Law Enforcement Against Prohibition UK, and you're pretty new organisation, really, aren't you? You're just kind of in the UK. Well, how long have you been about for?
Well, we've been sort of smoke and mirrors for a little while, really, but we've been growing slowly, and we are hopefully going to have an official launch this autumn, so just to get us more in the media and get us more known. Leap in Germany is about to launch in September, and then hopefully we'll follow a short time after that. you know, because the launch is important just so that we can try and make more media connections, try and get in the public eye a bit so we get the chance to persuade more people.
Okay, that's good, because Leap is doing quite good, and we've got Jason Reed coming on in a few weeks' time. I booked him for when I come back off my holiday on the 23rd of July, and you work with him as well, and he helped produce Culture High, so that's going to be a great radio show. But there was a few other people that did want to ask you questions now. So can we just, your website, can you just give the details of your Leap website, and then Jeff's going to ask you another question, if that's all right?
Yeah, no problem. Please visit our website at www.ukleap.org. Follow us on Twitter at UKLeap.
Okay, then, Jeff, you wanted to ask another question. You had a one in there, didn't you?
Hello,
Jeff. Dave. Hello.
Hello. Yeah, I was looking for my mute button. Can you hear me?
Yeah, hello.
Okay, just checking. Sorry, Neil. The question I was going to ask you before is, when you were undercover, did you have, how far did your undercover activities go? Did you have any sexual relationships with people you were investigating?
No.
Okay, cool. Because...
I would find that quite abhorrent, to be honest.
Well, I'm sure you're aware...
That's fairly twisted behaviour.
That's probably more down to your personal morals than your training, to be fair, Neil. But I asked the question because, as you're aware, there are other undercover police officers who've made similar talks about their past, but it invariably turns out that they had sexual relations with people they were investigating.
Yeah, no, not in my case, no.
Okay, that's good. And the other thing I was going to say is when you were talking earlier, and we were talking earlier about the dangers of cannabis, well, the biggest danger in the UK, and in fact the only danger of cannabis in the UK, and its greatest danger in the UK, is the very fact that it's prohibited.
I agree.
Because through Bud Buddies, we're assisting cancer patients, and we've had to target our efforts onto paediatric cases. So we now have over 30... children in the UK who were assisting their parents to treat them with cannabis oil, and that is a very, very difficult situation for the parents to be in, as I'm sure you can imagine.
Yeah.
And I also think that in this respect, by prohibiting medical use, certainly in oncology and cancer, that there can't be a police officer in the world who joined the police to arrest dying cancer patients or arrest the parents of kids who are trying to, who are just trying to save their kids' lives.
Quite.
Yeah, so it's the law that puts the police in a very difficult situation as well. And in March, at a meeting of the Home Affairs Select Committee, I actually challenged the Chief Constable of Leicester to arrest me because I was supplying oil illegally to someone in his area who was giving it to their four-year-old dying child. He refused to arrest me, even though I confessed to him.
Interesting.
Yeah, but the and also his aide-de-camp who came shooting over, she refused to arrest me either as well when I gave her the same opportunity. Unfortunately, it is the situation here in the UK. We have one particular Bud Buddy in the south of England who was caught by a nurse administering cannabis oil to his dying child. She reported him to the doctor. He reported to the police. He was subsequently arrested, and he was actually dealt with at a family court. And I'm sure you know the restrictions that the press have on reporting from family court as well as I do, Neil.
Yes.
So you see where it's going. This is why I think they dealt with him through the family courts, which I think was wrong, because for those that aren't aware, that legal cases in the family court system, it's contempt of court to actually report them in the media. So this particular father, in a closed court, not a public court, was told that his son was actually made a ward of court, He is not allowed to have any unaccompanied access to his son. And he's been warned that if he talks about this publicly or tries to give his son cannabis oil again, he will be in contempt of court and could possibly be imprisoned.
Appalling situation.
It is. And what I was going to say, Neil, is that Bud Buddy's obviously we're campaigning and trying to push hard on this issue. And I would welcome Leap support in a campaign that we're going to be launching soon if you'd like to discuss that in further detail.
Certainly, yes.
Cool. Are you going to be at Peterborough?
No, I can't be.
Ah, it's unfortunate. It's, yeah,
Is that the Hempfest?
Yeah, that's the one in the end of June. I'm going over here from Spain. I'm travelling over to the UK for that weekend.
No, unfortunately, I couldn't make that. But I'm sure we'll do somewhere else we can meet up and chat about that.
Yeah, sure. That'd be great, Neil.
Yeah, however I can do to help with that. I do have some knowledge of those kind of court procedures as well. I used to... I did a training package for social services in terms of dealing with drugs and families.
Cool.
Okay, thanks a lot, Neil. Thanks a lot, Jeff. We're only running... Well, we've got 2 minutes left now. So I just want to say a big thanks to everyone involved in the show tonight. And... just to get some final questions from Fabrice, who's been kindly asking lots of questions towards Neil and not had a chance. Neil, did you have specific targets for your drug arrests?
Yes, for virtually every operation, the target tended to be whichever organised crime group was dominating that particular area. The rules of undercover work are that they can only be authorised where normal policing methods have failed or are ineffective. That's the rules according to Ripper. And they tended only to be authorised for groups that were particularly, for my field of work anyway, groups that were particularly violent.
Oh, okay, thanks, Neil. And also, have you heard of the Feed the Birds campaign?
I have, yes.
What do you think about that?
Well, every time I see anything about it, it really makes me smile, especially last year. Was it the Daily Mirror had pictures of cannabis plants within sight of the Houses of Parliament? Brilliant. I love it because it normalises things and it gets people smiling at it, which is going to help, I think.
Do you know much about growing cannabis, Neil?
About which cannabis?
Do you know much about growing cannabis yourself, cultivating?
I do, yes.
Okay. How dangerous do you think it is to have male pollen from sort of normal hemp plants coming in on your crops when you're trying to grow high THC strains?
Well, I mean, obviously the plant, if the plant is fertilised, all the energy of the plant goes into producing seeds rather than producing the actual flowering head that's seed-free. So you don't want pollination to happen, really, for a maximum yield.
No, you don't want it to happen. So that's just one thing to be mindful of with Feed the Birds campaign, because a lot of people are feeding the birds with male seeds.
Oh, right. So they're not just feminised seeds people are using. That seems a bit daft, really.
Yeah, it does. So I think people need to, you know, take that into consideration.
Or invest in pollen
fillers. Anyway, because the idea is you want people to recognise the plant, and I doubt the members of anyone in the public would actually recognise a male plant.
No, I doubt it as well. And I have actually heard of medical crops being destroyed by pollen in the UK. So just people, you'll beware if you are doing Feed the Birds and throwing seeds. Make sure that you haven't got any male seeds at all, please, and that they're only feminised.
Wow. I shall pass on that advice to wherever. I didn't know that at all.
And if you are a grower out there and you might be worrying, get yourself a pollen filter, you know.
Nice one. Okay. So, Neil. hi. Right, Neil. Thanks ever so much for coming on. It's been really, really brave. You've answered a lot of very difficult questions, and it's been very honourable. So, a big thanks to you and everyone else for coming on. Thanks a lot, Jeff. Thanks a lot, Martin Ferran. Thanks a lot, Bob. And thanks a lot, Sean. And I wish that Leap goes from strength to strength. And Sarah,
yeah,
thanks so much.
Thank you.
And I hope Leap goes from strength to strength in the future. And please do feel free to keep in touch. Have a look at the blog. I mean, have a look at the Compassion Club blog. Read more about what we're doing and what we have done. And I hope to hear lots of positive things about what you're doing in the future. So cheers, mate.
Yeah, thank you very much. And thank you, everyone. We do get a lot of support on social media, and it's really, really appreciated. So thank you very much from Leap UK.
Thank you for accepting my invitation, Neil, and you're always welcome back on again because it's fascinating hearing your story, really.
All right, thank you, Sarah.
Thank you. Anyone else want to say goodbye?
I just want to say thank you to Neil. We only are a small group at Dark City, and everybody needs every little bit of help we can. So, you keep plugging on, man. And if you do decide you want to change of job, I'll definitely get you smuggling drugs over the border.
Well, thank you very much.
An idea that exists in the hearts of everyone. To put the resources into the hands of the people. To increase the quality and benefits of their life. Let's remove the middleman. Wednesday from 8 to 9 p.m. Dark City Compassion Club awaits you. It's your radio.